The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back. Friday, November 16th, 2018, evidently concluding today National Split Pea Soup Week. I did not know that, but it's maybe something I can ameliorate later tonight. we do things a little more on the culture front on Fridays, and delighted to have a good friend of mine in studio with us for this hour, Steve Moak Jr. He is the founder of True Mobile Health. You can follow them and reach him at truemobilehealth.com. Many of you regular listeners know his parents, know his mom, who often is in studio with me, Debbie Moak, co-founder of Not My Kid. We did a big breakfast earlier in the week, and Steve Moak Jr., my guest here, was the keynote and talked about tips and advice for parents. And I wanted to have him reprise some of what he said. But before we do that, and one of the areas of expertise that Steve Moak Jr. has is helping people through recovery. And as we go into the holiday season, I know this is a particularly tender time, to put it no stronger, for those, especially in early sobriety. And I wanted to have him speak with us and take any calls you may all have about some thoughts of his and some advice. Let me give out our number, 602-508-0960. And before I ask you, Steve, for the advice part of your time with us, ask you to, you've been with us before, but to anyone who's new to the new listening, tell us a little bit about who you are and how you got to be doing what you're
sure.
doing.
Sure. Are you sure you don't want Bill Montgomery back? He was terrific. That's a tough act to follow.
Bill is great, but you're great too.
I appreciate that. So my name is Steve Moak, and thank you so much for having me. I really do appreciate the time to be here and share. And I think I even said this last time. I'm not so heavy on the advice side, but more some suggestions, some personal lived experiences that I've been through that may be able to impart a little knowledge to you and your loved ones. I'm happy to share about that, and I'm very open with my story of drug and alcohol abuse and kind of where it got me to today, and I'd love to see if I could help prevent that in other folks out there.
Great. Tell us a little bit about how you got
Sure. So I grew up here. I've been here 30 years now with my family. I'm evidently the Kentucky woman, so I've come to learn.
Yes.
And my little journey started at Cocopah Middle School. So I grew up here in Scottsdale and Paradise Valley, had all the resources in the world, loving parents, good grades, vice president of my class, captain of the basketball team, all the things that I think you would really hope for in a son. Boy, it was so interesting. Like, I took my first drink just really through social peer pressure. And for me, it wasn't like I ran off and grabbed every bottle in the world and was instantly an alcoholic.
What age roughly were you?
So that was seventh, eighth grade, which, by the way, very common. Really,
12, 13 years old, something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah. So folks that are out there thinking, that's not my son or daughter yet, I would caution you to maybe have the conversation sooner rather than later. Yeah. So there really was a progression that started for me. And really, when I took my first drink, I remember it kind of relieving an anxiety that I don't even knew that I knew I had at the time. But that really started a journey for me that I had no idea in the path that it would take me. And then transitioning into Chaparral High School, still all of those positive things going on in my life. I was actually at a student government retreat. So these were the leaders of the school, the good, quote unquote, good students over at Coronado Island. And someone handed me a joint at that time. And I remember thinking harmlessly enough that I was with the cool older folks and I inhaled. And from there, I immediately associated with not only the positive reinforcement I got from the peers and the way that it made me felt and kind of the aura that went around it, that I went home and came back to Arizona and immediately sought out a way to find more marijuana for me. So for me, marijuana was absolutely 100% a gateway drug, and I really kind of push back on those who say that it is not. For me, it then led to more and more use. I started my daily use and then combined with daily alcohol use as well. And you can really look back in my high school and see the progression and correlations of my declining grades, decline in participation in athletics, which was a very important part of my life. Kind of the communication with my parents deteriorate. My friends and peer group changed at that time. It was all directly correlated to my drug and alcohol use. So by the time I was 19 years old, off to the University of Colorado in Boulder, which any good pot-smoking drunk would go to the University of Colorado at the time, and I certainly did. I was actually back and checked into a treatment center in Chandler, Arizona, before I was even 21 years old. Okay. So it really grabbed a hold of me fast from 16 years old, getting a bright, new, shiny car, to fast forward to 3 years later, I was sitting in a treatment center in Chandler, Arizona, wondering how the hell I got there.
Yeah.
It really happened that fast. And to a person who just thought, I could never be this way, I sat there in real shock. And that's also where Not My Kid started, you know, was really kind of the message of denial. I technically was the kid.
Yeah.
Technically was the kid. So it's been a real eye-opening experience, but so much good has kind of come from that now. Now to be able to share a lot of the life experiences that only myself but my family has gone through and how we can really help others is really the best part of everything that has kind of transpired.
Yeah, and one wonders sometimes what the point of all of it was, and we look back because there's a reason for everything, and in this case we might say very much the point was for you to help others.
100%. And what I always like to stress too is it's not – I get a lot of calls from moms, dads, husbands, wife, just, you know, fix my kid, right? I send them to the wilderness, they're coming back, right. Fix them. Like, this is
it doesn't work that way.
100% does not. This is really a family issue. And, you know, right when that person comes back from treatment or gets out of a detox, like, these things don't heal over time. There will need to be clinical, you know, counseling with the family to heal a lot of those burns and those deep distrusts that have happened over the years and years. So I'd like to think that our family has helped a lot of folks here in the state of Arizona. We want to continue to do so through the nonprofit, through the business that I run, and really supporting people in early recovery.
Steve, as we are going, thank you for that. As we are going into the holiday season, I'm right in saying this is an extra tender time for people, whether they are staying here, whether they are traveling. It's people, especially in early recovery, and I'm wondering if you might talk a little bit about your experience or thoughts you might share with people in those positions or in those shoes as to what they may want to think about and handle as we go through this. Before you do that, I'm sorry, let me just give out the number, too, for anyone who wants to call in, 602-508-0960. Go right ahead, sir.
Well, I'll tell you, first things first, I mean, most days, you know, if you do have a substance use disorder issue, it can be very challenging. Obviously, the holidays can compound that when you're surrounded by family members and put in social situations. If you're trying to be, you know, abstinence-free from drugs and alcohol, it can be definitely trying. So,
and the ads all over the place, by the way, are bombarding on these 100%, things, too, right?
100%. And the first thing I like to think of is, let's have a plan. You know, holiday parties are normal and natural, and by the way, they're okay to go to. But you have to, A, know yourself a little bit, right? Know and understand where you're at in early recovery and if that's the best place for you to be at that point in time. And if you feel that that's okay, and maybe talked about it with some trusted advisors who maybe think that this is an okay place for you, have a plan as you're going into that. Maybe you don't need to be staying there till midnight when the shots come out and different things start to happen. But if you can show up, say hi to everybody. Oftentimes the questions I get, well, won't everybody know that you're not drinking?
They never do, so, right? Seth, this is the biggest – I've learned over time that is one of the biggest concerns that never comes true, right?
I just had my 20-year reunion at Chaparral High School. We celebrated up at the Scottsdale Princess, and it was a great event. And obviously I'm 4 years sober, September 11, 2014, with my last drink. And I showed up at the event, had a cup of ice water in my hand. Not one single person asked me a question about what was in my drink or why are you not drinking and things like that. So
people don't care about your drinking as much as you do, it turns out, right?
It's in our head, Seth.
Right?
It's in our head. Yeah. But, you know, as someone who I identify as an alcoholic and a drug addict, you know, we have this thing in our head that tells us, you know, that it's going to be okay, that it's going to be different this time. And we have this little motor that's constantly running. And it's just not true that other people are going to sit there and notice and pick apart, like we tend to do so often, of others' appearance and judgment and being critical. Those things just don't come to fruition. Nobody's staring, wondering how many drinks you had. Nobody cares what's in your drink. I just successfully navigated. And by the way, I had a blast.
Yeah.
I saw other people get extremely intoxicated and was able to kind of sit back there and go, okay, this is good. I can see that some things haven't changed. But for me, I was able to walk through, shake hands, remember all the conversations that I had, and then politely bow out before it maybe started to escalate a touch. So, you know, having a plan. Another thing I like to share, know your support network, right? You know, understand, folks, that you can maybe pick up the call, because there is times that will be more difficult. Those thoughts could come racing back to you, those feelings, those cravings, whether it's drugs or alcohol. So know, have somebody that you've identified, whether that's through a 12-step approach or just a family mentor, loved one, or friend that you could reach out and really kind of share what's going on. You know, don't let those thoughts run wild in your head. And remember, by the way, they're just thoughts. You can replace those thoughts with other thoughts. And those things always do pass. So maybe have some tips and tricks so you'd be armed to kind of process how those things pop up and let them kind of float out of your head and kind of move on without them having to take over and really act upon those cravings and feelings.
Nicely said. We'll be right back with more from Steve Moak Jr. talking about strategies to get through the holidays if you or you know someone who is in early recovery. And also, I'm going to have him give a little bit of a talk to parents and grandparents, too, about how to keep your kids safe generally. I'm Seth Leibson. We'll be right back. Our phone number, should you want to talk to Steve, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. We're going to have this song now and permanently. This is my tip of the hat to the other Steve who was texting Montgomery and I earlier that we don't play any Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan actually wrote this song. So it's Johnny Cash, but it's a Bob Dylan written song. And I actually have a lot to say about Johnny Cash. We'll do it another day. We're with Steve Moak Jr. In the studio talking about all things having to do with prevention, substance abuse, and recovery. In the last segment, you were giving some of your experience in ideas to help people going through the holiday season, especially if they're in early sobriety. Steve, you gave a talk, a keynote address to a breakfast we did earlier in the week, advice to parents and grandparents to help them not necessarily have to go down the same road you
sure.
did. You did it the hard way, let's sure. say it. Let's put it that way. And I wondered if you might reprise. I mean, you captivated this audience of 250 mothers and fathers. I would love it if you could reprise a little bit of your message.
Sure, and thank you for that. I really do appreciate it. The first point I'd like to make is take action, right? So in my journey, there were multiple steps where I could have been intercepted earlier on to kind of prevent me from getting to the length and depth of kind of where I landed with my drug and alcohol addiction. So if you see something, say something. And one of the things that I share with folks is, like, if your kid is not necessarily prone to listening to all the advice you may have or suggestions, it may just be a barrier between you and them. If there's a mom, a dad, a coach, a loved one, a mentor, somebody that cares about your son or daughter that could share maybe that same message, but just coming from a different person and
That's
letting them know
point.
That they care.
So a parent could reach out to a coach and say, look, I think you could do a better job on this conversation.
Because if you would have come to me and shared, or mom or dad would have come to me, I probably would have blocked for a multitude of different reasons. But if that same message would have come from somebody, hey, let's go out and have a cup of coffee, grab lunch, you know, whatever that is, and just kind of share openly and honestly. And what I shared in that message as well is that it's important, not just from a substance use perspective, but all the general mental health issues that are facing our young ones today. So
That's a great one. All right. So you start with that. You start with having, and one of the things I think it's important to say too, because this is a big part of you and your mom's presentation. It's going to be earlier than you think that you're going to want to start, which gets to a point I've heard your mom and you both make a lot, which is delay, delay, delay. If you could start doing both ends of that, talk about the early intervention or the early discussions, early education, and then the point of delay, delay.
It really starts with breaking through the wall of denial. So that is the single probably biggest barrier for folks starting to understand that, I mean, not my kid came from exactly that, not my kid. It couldn't be me. It couldn't be the athlete. It couldn't be the student government. It couldn't be the popular kid that was walking around. Meanwhile, I was high as a kite walking around, driving around town. So it absolutely could and was me. So really understanding that your kid's changing behavior, the excuses that they're coming up with, the attitude, the mood swings, the cognition, the sleep, all these types of things are not due to X, Y, and Z thing that they may be labeling. So if you're seeing a significant change, take action earlier versus trying to say, it's blamed on X, Y, and Z thing. So really, you know, kind of seeing a change in your son or daughter and taking some action. And maybe that involves some clinical support. And also one of the things I shared in that message is if you need some level of family or individual counseling, that is not a flaw in your parenting. You know, that is you taking action. And really that taking action could be the difference in saving your son or daughter's life. They may experiment with drug and alcohol use and come through it. They may not. They may take that one or two oxy that they may never wake up from again. And the other thing that I like to share with parents as well is you don't have to give them permission by saying, I did smoking some weed, I did some drinking in high school and college, and I came through it okay. That's really kind of giving them the green light in so many ways to say that, you know, a little bit here and there won't hurt. We don't know that. These drugs and alcohol affect everybody differently and individually. And by the way, the drugs that are out there are significantly strong and lethal today. And so kind of giving them that green light really is not the message that you as a parent would need to be sending to your child today. And I can't stress enough the take action part. I mean, really, if you see changes in your son or daughter's behavior, start asking questions, open up those lines of dialogue. And by the way, if you can have those communication lines open before they get to that, even better. And I know that's a tall order. But if you can break them away from the phone or Fortnite or the television or whatever it is at that point in time, you know, having these conversations earlier to kind of open up those dialogue channels would be really beneficial.
And then that leads to the cognate point of that you guys make all the time, which is the goal is to delay, delay, delay. First of all, I like the point of just winning this year, but, you know, every year is a new year. The older you can get your kid before they initiate, the better, if you would talk a little bit.
No, 100%. And really, the science backs that up. I mean, if you can look and just if you guys get a chance while you're driving or get – and don't do it while you're driving – when you get home to look at some of the effects, especially marijuana is on the early developing brain, it has substantial impacts on the developing brain, meaning if we can help kids by putting that drug testing kit at that home on the counter and really starting to have that conversation, letting them know that, yes, this is something we take seriously and we will be monitoring your drug and alcohol use. If we can win that year and push them out to that next year and really get them to an age where they're now able to make their own decisions going forward, but now the brain has fully kind of crystallized and developed, that is a big deal just in terms of, and there's, you know, don't make me quote all the statistics on it, a huge deal in terms of potential drug addiction down the road as well. So if you can win that year, by all means, do whatever it takes to win that year. It is a big deal.
Say something. You mentioned drug testing kits. We give them out through Not My Kid. Tell us why you're a believer in those and how they can be a useful tool.
So first off, it starts the conversation. If you bring that drug test home and set it on the counter, you're going to get a couple different reactions. One is, okay, yeah, I did smoke, but that was my very first time. Okay, that was one of my classic responses to my parents when they first did it. Meanwhile, I'd been a daily smoker for many years. And by the way, when you catch your son or daughter, if you do, that's probably not the first time that they've been using as well. Typically, by the time they've been caught, this has been going on for several months, if
like
not
anything
longer.
Else in life. You know, I have looked at the statistics of anyone who's caught at anything. It's usually 80,
drunk driving,
85 times before they're caught.
You name it.
Honestly, 80, 85 times.
100%. So really setting that drug testing kit on that counter and having that conversation can do a couple things. And one of the most important things is gives your son or daughter an out.
That's the big one.
Right?
Do that. That's a huge
so
one.
So if they're going out to that party this weekend, and maybe they don't really want to use, but honestly, that peer pressure is significant through the music videos, through television, through music, right? They are getting all these messages that it's often glamorized, especially marijuana is almost labeled as some wonder drug these days, and that's just not the case. So if you sent that drug test kit on the table, that gives them an out when they're at the party. Say, hey, man, I'd love to. Honestly, I really would, but I'm going to get tested when I get home, and then I'm going to have my car, my phone, everything's going to be taken, so I just got to pass. But
it's really
you.
A bulletproof excuse.
It's an easy way, and it opens up that conversation as well, you know, because it's not something that's necessarily discussed every single day, but you put this out there really opens up a conversation with your son or daughter, and again, could potentially win that year for you as well.
Nicely said. We'll be right back with more from Steve Moak Jr. Any questions on prevention, on recovery? That's what we're here for this hour on the Seth Leibson Show. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. I am Seth Leibson. Our phone number is 602-508-0960. We're talking to Steve Moak, Jr. He is the founder of True Mobile Health. You can catch up with him and contact him after the show anytime you want, or during the show today if you want by our phone number, but after the show through his website, truemobilehealth.com. We're talking about strategies for prevention for parents and for grandparents of their kids, basically a follow-up to the great speech you gave at a big breakfast we did with Not My Kid earlier in the week, Steve. It was a message that you delivered to 260 great interested, you had them wrapped, parents, mothers, fathers, grandparents. I wanted the message to be expanded as much as I could, and that's why I'm having you here today, so thank you for being here.
Of course.
Let's talk about the medicine cabinet for parents. You know, there's been in our culture such a confusion, some of it deliberate, but it has confused people in ways, I think, that are sometimes subtle and ignored, and we need to pay attention to it. The notion that's been – the thing that's been confused, I think, a lot is the medicinal and the medicine – being used for recreation. Talk about sometimes the biggest threat can be in the bathroom.
Well, just to your first point, medicine, so we have marijuana that's medicine and legal. So I'm still trying to wrap my brain around how that. I don't think I would want my son or daughter to be taking Ritalin or Adderall.
Well, that's the message that's so unfortunate. I'll say more about that. But yeah, the notion that we would take something that's considered medicinal. And say, well, it's okay to use it for recreational purpose. We don't do that with any medicine, be it aspirin or Adderall or Xanax or anything.
And the thing with the medicine cabinet that I shared earlier this week on Wednesday is really, you know, the opioids get all of the attention right now. And there is, you know, funding come the federal government to address this. And as needed, by the way, I mean, people are dying daily. But the hidden thing that's somewhat behind this that I don't believe is getting enough attention are the benzodiazepines, which is really what are killing people at an alarming rate as well.
Known by common names
as Xanax and things like that. Those are the things that are sitting, you know, for anxiety, depression, those types of drugs and alcohol that are often taken in conjunction with either opioids or alcohol. And it really can suppress the breathing to the point where you cannot wake up. And
a lot of these quote unquote overdoses that are identified as opioid overdoses, as often you're going to find it was in combination with a benzodiazepine or alcohol.
You're going to see that sitting, that pill bottle sitting in the side of their bed.
Right.
You know, it's very, very likely. And it's a scary thing. And again, I worked at a treatment center here in Scottsdale, Arizona for a year. And let me first say the number one worst condition folks that I saw walk in the door were alcohol. So let's I did mention in my speech earlier that it's
just because it's legal, it's not safe.
It is by far, in a way, the most abused thing in our country. Yeah. I mean, I would use the word drug, but it is by far, in a way, and I know
it is a drug.
Probably not a very popular opinion or something you want sharing on a Friday night at 5:30 with folks, but it really is. The folks that came in with alcohol use disorder into the treatment center were just crippled. And that really is the thing, above all things, that needs medical detox as well. So the cold turkey approach from someone with a severe drinking problem.
It can be deadly.
It absolutely can be deadly. And please, to those that are out there that may be struggling or have a loved one that is, please do that in a medically supervised manner to protect their health. It really is that important. But right behind, and people think it's the heroin addicts and different things like that. And yes, it is very ugly to see people, you know, coming off of that stuff. But the benzodiazepine folks, to the point of shaking and almost crippled in a sense and shuffling along. Those are the folks that we saw walking in the door that started with a legitimate prescription to a Xanax and then started to take a little bit more and then continued to have to take more and more.
Or someone took it unauthorizedly, someone in the house, a visitor, a child.
100%. 100%. And it really.
We're not saying these medicines are bad as medicine. We're
no,
not making that point.
No.
They are useful tools. Under the supervision
as prescribed,
of
I think
a doctor.
Is,
absolutely.
I think as prescribed.
Right.
And even then, I still see folks who become dependent on things, and that's something that we have to watch. But taken as prescribed under medical supervision, of course. But when these things can get quickly abused, I have seen some of the worst folks walk into the treatment center, first alcohol, second benzodiazepine. So really, really a scary thing that just I don't feel like it's talked about enough.
No, I agree with you. There are a few articles starting to come out saying things like, when talking opioids, you must must also talk benzodiazepines.
Good.
It's just starting to get there. I'm glad you're on the case. When we come back, Steve, on the other side, this was a short segment. We're talking to Steve Moak Jr. When we come back, the question I get a lot, and we get a lot from parents, is twofold. One is something you did touch on a little earlier, I want to come back to, how to talk to your kids when they ask you about what you did. Mm-hmm. And also a notion we hear often enough from parents, which is, well, I know my kid's going to do it. I just assume and rather have them do it safely with me or under my supervision in my house, which I believe is a surrender. But I would like to have you talk about that.
I've been on both sides of it as a participant and now on the other side as well.
Excellent. If you have questions, 602-508-0960. Be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. We're talking to Steve Moak Jr. He is the founder of True Mobile Health. You can catch up with him or check them out at truemobilehealth.com, talking about strategies for preventing your children or your grandchildren from getting into problems that will lead to emotional and mental health issues, primarily substance abuse problems. There are ways to prevent it. That's what Steve has dedicated his life to. He was giving a keynote speech to a group earlier in the week. I just was so happy to hear that. I wanted to give it as big an audience as possible. Steve, one of the things, and this is where I'm going to ask you to become hard, Steve. We were doing the soft, right? Softer, easier, okay. Softer, kinder, gentler, Steve. Now I want you to do hard, Steve, if you will. This is a hard topic and a hard message that needs to be delivered. How many parents have I heard tell me, well, my strategy or one of the things I think is a good idea is I know my kid's going to drink. I know he's going to use or smoke pot or vape. At least I think what I want to do is give them a safe place to do it. I want to have them do it in the house with my supervision. To me, this is a surrender, but I'd like you to talk about it.
So as an attendee, I remember my senior year in high school at a friend's house whose mother took all of our keys and we all proceeded to get wasted. I mean, there was just...
So she knew this was happening.
Knew this was happening. Obviously, I had lied to my parents kind of on the pretense of what I was out and doing and got so drunk to the point, and obviously supervision was there for a bit.
Yeah.
I ended up getting my own keys back at some point in time in the wee hours of the morning and driving myself back to my house thinking that I was going to be able to sleep it off. And God willing, I made it there safely when I had no business in order to do that. So thinking that that's an acceptable way, you know, to kind of supervise what is an illegal activity, first off, is really a dangerous approach. And I know I was just having this conversation with my mother about a family who had a son do a very similar thing, get into an accident and kill someone. And not only the legal and financial implications of that, but just the trauma that it has caused to the family unit as a whole because they thought they were doing the quote unquote right and responsible thing. I think it's okay and fair to draw those hard boundaries. And by the way, check in with those other families, know what's going on, know where that mom or dad's stance is on these types of issues.
When your kids go over to play or spend time with.
Correct, right. Correct. It is okay to call and check in and have a conversation around that, and it's okay to not let them go as well.
And it's okay for a parent to be a parent. And even if the idea is not that that anyone will be driving, heck, let's say they're even before driving age maybe, it's okay not to help initiate and to not initiate at all. You, after all, can say, A, it's illegal, and B, we're not going to surrender, because the point you and your mom like to make a lot, which I love, which is you don't have to. You don't have to start.
Right.
The notion that everyone's doing it and they're going to do it anyway is a surrender to a myth. It's not true. It's not true.
And it's hard. We understand that. We understand that it may not be the most popular thing. It may not get you invited to all the parties at the PTA events and all these types of things. But really being a parent and saying, I am not okay with certain types of behavior like this, and then doing the follow-up and check-in with those parents, you know, building a little community of support around yourself of trusted parents and loved ones where you can freely set the boundaries, and I think boundaries are so very important in this, is a healthy thing to do.
Steve, harder question. maybe harder.
Okay.
Hard question as well. Parents who have in their youth experimented or didn't have the most parents who partied in high school, when their kids ask them, well, what was your experience like? What do you advise parents? How do you advise parents to talk to their children about their own experience?
You do not have to give them permission, meaning you do not have to share exactly what you did or did not do. Because if the traditional answer, which it was in my house as well, is, yeah, I smoked a little bit, partied a little bit, and then I went on to see my parents live successful, healthy lives and things like that, I always just assumed that I could do that. I never knew what that meant. They never told me the degree, but it was, hey, you know, I was in the fraternity and I did this, that, and the other thing. So it really kind of gave me the green light. I'm certainly not blaming them in any way, shape, or form for that. But it really, in my mind, I had permission because I thought, okay, they did that and ended up successful. I can do that and end up successful. That is just not the case. Every drug and alcohol that you put into your body impacts everybody significantly differently. So that same drug or alcohol use put through your son or daughter may tip them over a line that they potentially cannot come back from.
And we see this in genetics, by the way. Just to illustrate for people who may have a struggle believing what we're talking about. You can take a family and see it. You can take a family and see whether with siblings or children, grandchildren, where there might have been the substance abuse up the line or up in the family tree, it can hit different members of the lineage at different points. You can have a sister and a brother, a sister not have a problem, a sister, you know, taking a drink and it never leading to a problem, and the brother not.
I think 100%. I think the most important
point. This is your family, too.
100%. And I think the most important point that I hear you making right there is talking about it, yep. Bringing that discussion up within the family that, hey, we do have a history of substance mm-hmm. abuse. We do have a history of, by the way, other mental illnesses mm-hmm. that could be a part of our family. In having conversations, I'm not saying my behavior may have been differently, but had I known the degree to which alcoholism.
Or had your parents known at the time, quite frankly, too, right?
100%. It's just, you know, it's almost like, boy, if we look back and we yep. do that 30,000-foot overview now, it's like, wow, it was there. My mom lost her sister to this disease, and yet we still never really had those family conversations, you know, early on that.
And we know more now, too. I mean,
with
the ability to do genetic testing and all this sort of thing, we just know more now than we did.
We do, and yet sometimes I still hear families that are strong in that denial.
Of course.
Right? I just feel like it's a reflection so many times of them when it's just not the case. Having these hard conversations early really could save your son or daughter's life.
Yeah, nicely put, Steve. The other thing I would like you to talk about, hard Steve, okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We touched on it a little bit. Just take a minute, if you would, and say something about the dangers of marijuana, because we seem to have taken what we seem to surrender on these things too. We say, well, it's not the hardest of drugs. If they're going to use something, have them use marijuana.
So it's so interesting that you asked me that question. I was a daily marijuana user for almost 20 years, Seth. So to hear my position on it now is quite the difference. And first off, don't believe that you cannot be addicted to marijuana. I smoke daily. Ask anybody who's a regular smoker to have them stop doing it and see what happens.
That's a hugely important point because I've seen this again and again and again. For those who think it's not addictive, take a daily smoker and take it away.
Take it away. And you're going to see cognition. You're going to see appetite, sleep loss, irritability, anxiety, a whole variety of things. It is a seriously strong drug that you can be dependent upon.
And I think part of the problem is so many parents tried it and they will think, well, I didn't do anything problematic for me. And that's true. The problem is, though, twofold. Like any other drug, you don't know how it's going to affect someone differently, A. B, it ain't the same marijuana. We're now talking, I don't even call it marijuana anymore. I call it turbo pot. It is such a highly charged THC drug. It's almost a different drug than I knew in high school or your parents knew in high school. We got to go to a break.
Yep, of course.
Come back on the other side with one last quick thought. I'm Seth Liebson. He's Steve Moak Jr. We'll be right back. Th- Thank you for spending some of your day with us. It means a ton to us. We take none of you for granted. We appreciate you being with us for the three-hour tour or any part thereof. We've been talking with Steve Moak Jr. about strategies to get through the holidays if you are in early recovery. We've been talking about strategies for prevention if you have children or grandchildren in elementary or secondary school. Steve, thank you for coming in with us and doing this with us for the last hour. I'd like to close with whatever concluding thoughts you have. We've done some hard stuff this hour, maybe on a note of hope, too, if you don't
know. No, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, so often we get tons and tons of questions of what can we do. And I do like to share that things can get better. By the way, they will get better, but it requires effort and it requires taking action. It requires steps. And by the way, it requires the family. It's not just the get better drug addict, alcoholic, whatever person. It requires a family of healing, time, communication, really kind of getting to root causes that maybe have gone unspoken for many years. But things can get better. People do recover, and people can go on to live extremely healthy and exciting and beneficial lives and give back to others. I mean, I'm getting my master's in counseling from Grand Canyon University. I have a small business that I run and work with others and volunteer. That, Seth, that's not the person you would have seen 4.5 years ago walk into this studio. Just that selfish, egotistical person who's now able to really, you know, kind of become a new person through kind of this gift of recovery and sobriety. It can happen. And by the way, it does happen and is happening every day. And I know all of this talks about opioid deaths and things like that, but there are people who are getting better every single day.
Well, Steve Jr., thank you to you and your family for taking your experience and sharing it with so many and helping so many. There's an old line from Oscar Wilde I like very much. Every saint has a past, every sinner has a future, and I think maybe we'll just close the hour on that and thank everyone for joining us this week. We will see you again on Monday, and until Monday, class is dismissed.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.